You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Charlotta Westergren. She's talking to me from Brooklyn. Charlotta, thanks so much for being with me today.
Thanks for having me.
So let's talk about your work, and perhaps we should start with the show that you recently had that came down, right?
Great, yeah. That was at 106 Green in Brooklyn. It had been a while since I'd had a show. My shows actually seem to be taking longer and longer to produce. And I think it's because I work in themes. It's almost like I see each show as almost like a play. And there's usually always a sculptural installation component, sometimes a video. I've worked with scent. But the thing that's constant also is that I'm always working on oil paintings, these very time-consuming projects. And so, like, my daily practice in my studio is painting. And that is sort of how I come to ideas and I develop my ideas. But then when I have an exhibition, like I said, it really feels like one piece leads to another and it tells a story. So let's talk about the last one and
the story that it tells, because that's interesting that it all comes out of painting, because there's such elaborate installations, which, you know, you can describe now or walk us through, you know, the different senses you're using. But, you know, I think it'll be easy to see why it takes you a while to do these. The installation of these in the building is very elaborate and time-consuming, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And, you know, it may be worth mentioning that I come out of an architecture background. So before I was an artist, I was an architect. And that process of working with engineers and subcontractors is something that I think is just like a part of who I am. So it just somehow things don't feel, you know, painting is a very solitary practice. For me, it is, and my work is my paintings are very time consuming. So it's like the ideas are developed that way, but then there's this kind of need to, I don't know if I want to collaborate, may not be all of it, but it's much more kind of, there's a strong control element in my work, I think. So, so we can talk. The last show that I had was called Home. And in this show, there was this oil painting that was called Carolyn Glasso Bailey, and it had her birth and death dates. And there was a wall installation that was painted removable wallpaper that had these three-dimensional animal heads on it. So it was kind of this scene of wainscoting, and then the animals were sort of coming out of the architecture, coming out of the wainscoting, or sitting on top of it. And there was a rhinoceros, there was a goose, and a couple mice kind of running within this architecture, and the heads were three-dimensional. And then there was a very large glass, almost in the vein of a kind of Venetian glass chandelier, but it had kind of, if you imagine like a Venetian chandelier, kind of grown out of control. So it started to touch the floor, and, you know, you couldn't, you
had
to walk around it.
Right? It's almost like a tree growing from the ceiling.
Yep, exactly. And, you know, and there were lots of different kinds of flowers and grapes, and there was this beehive with bees flying, and there were ladybugs. And that piece is called Gardening. And so the painting, Carolyn Glasso, was a piece that I had worked on for probably 2.5 years. I mean, I was working on other paintings while I was working on that. And it was a piece that developed my sort of sister, art dealer, best friend, was this woman, Carolyn Glasso. And she died of brain cancer in 2015. And that painting sort of started when she was dying. And a lot of other things were happening in my life at that point. I had a little child. We had to move out of our house. We had a gut renovation. We had a lot of sort of difficult stuff happening. And Carolyn dying was so, my life as an artist was so kind of wrapped. We had such a kind of, I don't know if codependent is the right word, but we were so close. I mean, I think I had a really rare relationship with her in a way that, you know, it almost felt like something that happened, you know, during the Renaissance or something. Like she was just, she helped me. And she also sold my art. And it was kind of this moment in my life where I was having to sort of redefine who I was as a person and as an artist.
And then let me just ask you that, because that's so powerful. Yeah. When you mentioned the Renaissance, you mean almost a kind of patron artist relationship? She was a supporter
and
mentor? She was
absolutely
a
patron. Yeah, absolutely. And then, I mean, just in a sort of crass financial way, whenever I was dead broke, Carolyn would sell a painting for me. Would just, you know, she would just sort of swoop down. She was kind of like a fairy godmother. If life was really tough, she'd say, fly to Ojai and work in our studio for a month, you know, before your LA show. She introduced me to all of the dealers that I've worked with. It was, you know, it was a very rare relationship that I don't really think exists anymore. And you can imagine then, I mean, it was devastating because she was one of my closest friends, but also since her death.
Yeah.
And at that point, it just really changed sort of my whole notion of what would my art life be like without Carolyn? What would my life be like without Carolyn? And then I had this sort of small child, and I had never imagined that I was going to be a mom. You know, I was an artist who, you know, just like flew freely through life. And then suddenly I had this like domestic life, and then my art life was, you know, flying away. And so it was really about it was an investigation of loss. I mean, I think that painting is really about loss. And I mean, I don't know, the scene it's a interior of a kind of, it's a sort of Swedish country home. And then there's you look through this room, and in this door, there's this empty, it's like emptiness, this empty bed.
Right, but a fairly straight painting, right, of an interior of a looks like a bedroom almost, right? Is it a bedroom?
Yeah, it's a little, it is straight. It's wonky. Like if you're standing in front of it, it's almost life-size. So the chair is sort of almost life-size. It's a large piece. And so it does have the a feeling of that you're sort of entering into the space a bit as you stand in front of it. But it's also got this very strange, wonky perspective. So people are confused. It's like, is this a mirror reflecting this room, or is this a room beyond? There is a kind of weird psychological wonk of space that happens to it. And also, you know, I think one of the things with my paintings is that they don't really translate in photographs so well because they read as sort of photorealistic. And when you're standing in front of them, you know, in the way that like Kehinde Wiley's work is very photorealistic, and I always feel it's great work, but I always feel like seeing the painting in person, other than the scale being a huge deal, the way that it's painted isn't so integral to the piece, you know, to his work. Whereas, like, the way that my work is painted, it's you see the hand. Like, it feels almost, I call it hyperreal. You know, it's almost like I'm looking more at Flemish work and, like, Albrecht Dürer and, like, the idea that each blade of grass is painted. And it's almost like you come to understand the space or the objects through physically making it, and you see
right.
I'm so glad
you said that. So that was in the painting you're discussing, but also within the installation, the painting of a rhinoceros,
yes,
which is, as I understand it, on removable wallpaper. Isn't that also along the lines of what you're saying in terms of technique? That there's faux elements in there of architecture and shadow also making
yes.
it this kind of wowing image that was painted by hand as well. I mean, to the average viewer, right?
Right, and so it has this kind of strange, it has a kind of a strange psychological, because at first you sort of think, wait, is that a photorealistic, or is that, and then it's the animals have these three-dimensional heads that are not that photorealistic. They're much more kind of caricaturish. So you can sort of see right away that it's not. So the wallpaper piece is called Gut Renovation. And that is about this gut renovation in my house. So my kid was 2 and had lead poisoning. We just had like a, visit with a 2-year-old and we had this sort of like, you've got to move out of your house. We moved into, another apartment, and I haven't worked in architecture in, over 10 years. And so now suddenly I was it's a small apartment project, but I was kind of wearing the same hat that I wore many years ago, and I was the architect of the project, and I worked with the general contractor, and it was about that role of like, here I am, and as I said earlier, my work is really about control and almost like that Sisyphean task of like changing your environment and like changing the world, which of course you can't really do. So I was thinking about the house that I grew up in and my family a lot of my earlier work is about childhood. And then when you have your own child, which I never imagined myself having, and your own family, which I never imagined myself having, I was so aware of the things that had formed my identity, and so many of those were the spaces and the places and the smells and the artwork in my homes or my family's homes. And I was thinking about how that environment that I create is going to affect my son. And it also was about that desire to make and shape an environment for your kids that isn't broken, that is magical and that is kind of perfect, which of course you can never do.
But this is also an architectural issue as well as a parenting and aesthetic issue.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. And I mean, and the thing about being an architect too is that it's really grunt work because, your life is sort of spent arguing with some subcontractors and, never getting what you want and, arguing about money. And, it's there's a reason why when people tell, divorces happen over, like renovations, there's a reason because that stuff is actually really stressful and it like really strikes at when you're gutting your home, it really strikes at kind of the core psychology within a family. It's like it's loaded. It's really loaded stuff. And I was so aware of how loaded it was, mostly because I have been an architect. I've been on the other side of this dealing with, my clients, but also because I've processed my life and my childhood through my architecture. So it felt impossible and surreal and painful. And, I think that wall piece, and I also think the piece gardening, the chandelier, I think they both sort of touch upon this kind of, and I think it's in a lot of my work, it's in my older work too about my childhood, it's this kind of, it's really whimsical and it's really kind of funny and pretty and silly, but it's also really dark and creepy and weird, that's in the work too. It's not, it isn't just kind of,
it's also kind of very, I don't want to use a cliche, but it is kind of heartfelt and sincere and about grieving.
Yes,
well,
this show certainly was. I mean, I don't know if that translates to the viewers, and I think that's always been, I think when you make shows in the way that I make them, it is, again, back to the sort of theatrical component to it. You know, you, I mean, I know all artists feel this way, that, you know, you make your work and then you sort of send it out there into the world and it's perceived how it's perceived, you know, and it's often totally not what you imagine people would read into the work. And I've kind of been bitten by that, you know, in reviews of past shows and things like that, that it's totally sort of fallen, you know, it's had the opposite read in certain times. But I think my intention is always, yeah, sort of, it's about coming to some understanding through making this stuff. It is a kind of like, I can't believe I'm saying it, but there is a kind of art, you know, therapeutic quality to it, which I'm uncomfortable with, but, you know, it's there.
Right. And well, I think that is for so many artists. I mean, even just saw a film on Joseph Beuys, and, you know, there was those same elements there of kind of displaying a wound almost, you know,
yep.
which is that. So, just to talk a little bit about, since you've been mentioning parenting and all this and this big transition you went through,
yeah.
How did everything change? You know, not only did your patron, you know, pass away, which, you know, my condolences, I'm sorry to hear that. But also you had a child and you're moving and everything and architecture and did you change careers or did you continue to paint or do architecture or teach or did something else happen there in terms of your vocation after your
friend? My life, like my money life and my, I mean, you know, as I said before, I've always seen myself, it's funny because my husband is a journalist and my father was a journalist. And we moved around a lot when I was a child. And I'm Swedish, which you wouldn't know from listening to me, but I was born in Sweden and I spent every summer in Sweden. And we still do try to spend a lot of time with Alec in Sweden.
Did you know me asking, where in Sweden?
So I was born in Stockholm, and we lived in Stockholm, but my family has a summer house, which sounds way too fancy. It's more like a shack in southern Sweden in a town called Aarhus, which is on the Baltic, the very southern tip of Sweden. This magical place. Just, and a lot of my
friends
about that place.
I'm glad I asked, but yes. So let me go back when you're finished with that. But yeah, that sounds gorgeous wherever that is.
It's gorgeous and it's peaceful. And I mean, I was there with Alec for a month last summer and we came back to New York and he's a kid who's got some, he's a very intense kid with some sensory issues anyway. And we got back to New York after being there for a month and he wouldn't go on the subway. He was, you know, really like freaking out. You know, I couldn't bring him to school. I couldn't get him on an elevator. Like, my point is like the peacefulness and the kind of like calm and like how centering that place is for me. And it was interesting to see for my kid as well.
Right.
Has been in my work forever. And that's kind of when you see of the Carolyn Glasso painting, the front room is kind of Sweden. It's like my summer house or, you know, the place where I come from. But I think your question was what happened.
You were talking about traveling. Yeah, your whole life, how you have the whole vocation or whether you,
right.
Because you
so
no longer
I,
had a patron. And you were talking about
right.
that you come
so
from a family
of
travelers.
Oh, I was talking about journalism. Oh, yeah.
Journalism,
I've always kind of seen myself as, and I think a lot of artists probably see themselves this way, but it's also part of being an immigrant. Like, I've never seen myself as connected to a community or a place. I've always seen myself as an outsider. And part of that's the immigrant, part of that's the artist. And I've always seen myself as almost like a chronicler, like I'm here to tell a story of a time, you know, or the way that artists can be like vessels through which, you know, cultural zeitgeist travel or whatever. I've seen my role really as that rather than somebody who like creates roots somewhere. And, you know, when you have a family, when you have a kid, that's what you do. Like, you have to do that. It was just a really, I've become somebody who I never thought I'd be. And it's, you know, totally fulfilling and amazing, but also it's definitely at odds for me with my art. I mean, that has been a struggle. You know, I'm in my studio and what's in my studio now are paintings of empty rooms. But I mean, the money part of it is a few years, like, I don't know, maybe 7 years ago, I started my own painting school. So I teach oil painting once a week to, it's more like an atelier or something. Like, I've been teaching the same people for, you know, 7 or 8 years now, and I have a group of 8 students who I work with. And so that's how I make my money, and I do try.
I mean, I think that's interesting to say and mention. I'm glad you mentioned that, because that is, as much as that sounds like a sustaining, you know, financial way to support yourself and your son, but also you're extending your way of painting out into the world, almost like a Renaissance, again, relationship. I would imagine those painters that you're teaching are also painting not unlike you in some way.
Well, it's funny you say that, because they one of the things they like about me is that, like, if you came to my painting class, everybody has a very distinct style. They're all really doing their own things. But they all have to go through the initial Charlotta Westergren, like, hazing process, which is about a year long, and it's like old school oil painting. You know, that's what I teach them how to do. And then after that, they do really different things. So I have people painting abstractions and people painting expressively. And so they definitely don't look like my work. But I do feel like when I was in art school, nobody ever taught me anything material. Like, nobody really teaches you how to paint in contemporary art schools, you know? And I just think it's kind of cool to be able to teach somebody, this is, you know, how you glaze, this is how you, you know, do chiaroscuro light, you know. So, yeah, there's that element to it, although they're doing different things.
I think that's very interesting. I think that is important, and that isn't taught, you know. I was just at a dinner party the other night, well, not the other night, a few months ago, and there was some teachers there from SVA in Manhattan, and one of the painting teachers somehow got into this conversation about how, you know, she likes to talk about actually painting. And she says, and the dean comes in and he says to the students, you know, you could make videos of these, cut them up, do this, do that. And she said, that has nothing to do with painting. And she was sort of saying that you don't hear about that much anymore. But she said plenty of students still want to really learn how to paint, which remarkably they don't teach you when you get an incredibly expensive MFA from a school like, SVA or Yale or anywhere.
They definitely don't. No, because, you know, ultimately it becomes about, I mean, it's not just the administration. I think it's the teachers too. I don't think, you know, I think so many people too came out of like an ABEX background and also just don't know how to paint, right? I mean, I'm talking about it like a very classical way of painting, you know, like color theory, you know, very classical things. And I've just always thought, start with that grounding and then do something totally different, but that it's useful to have it.
Well, I'm so glad you mentioned that. And so you're not doing architecture now. That's you're obviously having shows and teaching. Is there anything else you wanted to mention in terms of what you do, or are you working with a builder?
No. I mean, you know, mostly like I said, because of the way I work, you know, I'm definitely back in my studio, but I am also really fishing for, you know, that next kind of that next project, right, which comes through making these paintings. So, No, the teaching is kind of like a one day a week thing or one evening a week thing, but it all comes together. You know, it all sort of forms who we are.
That's terrific. I'm so glad you talked about all of those things and your beautiful vacation place too in Sweden. Before we go, I want to ask about what you're reading, but do you want to mention anything about what you're working on, an upcoming show, or I know you're in between, so it's hard to define, but do you want to mention anything about what's happening in your studio at the moment?
I think, you know, beginnings of things, as I said, paintings of rooms, of spaces. There are the large gardening chandelier that was in my last show. There are, so in my project that I've done in the past, I've worked with pulled and blown sugar. Sugar has all the qualities of glass, so you can actually treat it like glass. Mm. And so I'm picking that up a little bit again. And I don't know, we'll see. Visually, that chandelier and the pulled blown glass pieces that were wildflowers that were pulled and blown from sugar, visually they're quite similar, and I'm just playing with like what connections they have and where I can go, maybe bringing them both in.
Well, that's exciting because visually the chandelier is of course, I mean, for me, from what I can see, I haven't seen it in person, but it looks gorgeous, and it also looks like there's an awful lot of work in there, the glass work and everything. Are you doing all that glass work yourself, or do you work with other contractors?
When I was working with the sugar, I was doing that myself, and the glass is like, it's kind of like found glass pieces that then get glued and melded to other things. So it's more kind of recycling pieces that, that I get on, old used pieces that I get on eBay, and then I kind of meld them onto other pieces. And so it's not, I'm not blowing glass at all. It's just more about piecing things together, and I have those pieces in my studio, and I'm playing with them on smaller scales is what I'm doing now, and just starting somewhere. And I have worked with Patrick Painter in LA, and he sort of really wants to work with me again, and we'll see, the work has to come first, so.
Sure, that's exciting.
That's
so good luck with that, and the listeners can find out more through your website, of course, which will be linked in here as well. And before we go, I want to ask what you're reading at the moment.
Oh, right.
Could be anything at all.
So, I'm reading, which is not, I haven't been somebody I read sort of classic poetry, but I haven't really been a contemporary poetry person. But I'm reading poetry. I'm reading Monica Young, who's this amazing poet. There's a book called Black Acres that is amazing that I'm reading, and I'm going back to, and Citizen, that Claudia Rankin book, and there's something about, both of those books, Claudia Rankin, it's basically about, Black Lives Matter, about being Black.
Sure, well, but it's very poetic today. As well. It's really something of a poem.
Yeah, it's a poem, and there's something you can do viscerally, right, with poetry that is that you feel in your body in a way that all the reporting in the world can't actually get. And I do feel like the world that we're living in is just so, fucked up, and so we're so disconnected from it, and there's so many of these problems that there is something about, and this is true of Monica Young too, it's like you process this poetry through your body, and to me that's where a lot of the answers lie, is us actually feeling this rather than sort of intellectualizing it or distancing it through journalism or through
yeah, I love that. That's very interesting. Yeah, I'm just reading a book by Clarice Lispector, and she talks about that at one point. She says, you don't understand music. You listen to music. She said, so don't try to understand my writing. Just listen to it. And her writing is very poetic, but that's a very, as you're saying, very different way of taking things in and quite different.
Art does too, right? I mean, like, I feel like that's what we can all do as visual artists, is just like provide a different way of communicating these, or answers or just ways of processing this stuff.
Mm. Yes. Charlotte, I want to thank you so much for talking with me today. It's really been a pleasure.
Thank you.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.